I'm Fritz Krusen. This is Nick Simoniak. We're with AGDC, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, not to be confused with a rock band. It's always a pleasure to come down and speak on the Kenai Peninsula because you all understand industry, and you all understand the oil and gas industry, and you all understand this particular segment of the oil and gas industry, the LNG business. So I'm going to talk about why this project works economically under AGDC leadership, and then Nick's going to talk about some of the benefits that the project brings to the state of Alaska. So we do like our movie references at AGDC. Who are these guys? So we are a public corporation chartered by the state of Alaska to do something. And that something is to develop a gas line project. It's got to be an economic project. It's going to take gas from the North Slope of Alaska, the abundant hydrocarbon reserves we got up there. It's going to move it by pipeline across the state of Alaska. It's going to convert it from natural gas to liquid natural gas at a facility in Kenai. We're going to export it, sell it to foreign buyers, bring money back to the state of Alaska, and by participating in a much bigger project, we'll get economy of scale and get gas to Alaskans for less than it would otherwise cost. So commercialize North Slope gas and get gas to Alaskans. That's what we're about. So there's been some negativity about the project, and I understand it. I've been involved in three previous iterations. Every time we thought we had it, and we didn't. But this time the stars are aligning, and I'm pretty confident we're going to bring it in. So what's different this time than last time, or last three times, or last 10 times? Well, the market for natural gas is really expanding in the Asia Pacific region, which is our target market. And in fact, it's being driven by economic growth in China. So when we started our marketing efforts earlier in 2017, we sort of went first to Japan because they were the traditional and the biggest buyers of LNG. And then we went to Korea because they were sort of the second biggest. And then we went to China and we knocked on doors. And as we were knocking on doors, it became apparent we have the order wrong. And really, China were the ones to concentrate on. And actually, China have opened the door the largest for us. And this gives you a little bit of a picture of how supply and demand have changed, for natural gas have changed in China over the years. So for a while, they track. But somewhere around 2010 or so, demand starts outstripping supply, and that is satisfied by bringing in liquid natural gas from places other than Alaska. So not only do you have economic growth driving a big increase in natural gas consumption in China, but you know, they've got a reputation of a fairly of having a pretty bad air pollution problem. So if you look back to the Olympics that they had, the Summer Olympics that they had in Beijing in 2008, what you might have seen were blue skies. But if you had arrived there a week before, they were gray. So what they did is they turned off industry all around Beijing right before the Olympics. And so there were blue skies for the athletes, blue skies for the tourists, and as soon as everybody left, they went back to burning their coal and things got bad again. Well, they realized that they couldn't keep that up. And so around 2013, 2014, they made a concerted switch to start moving away from coal and moving towards natural gas. So now you've not only got growth driving their demand for natural gas, you've also got a desire for clean fuels. So where do they go for their liquid natural gas? Well, you could go a lot of places, but why not come to Alaska? we're already supplying a good deal of fish, a good deal of timber, a good deal of minerals. We're only 7 to 9 days from China, Korea, Japan. So we're a great strategic partner for those buyers. You don't have to go through a Panama Canal. You don't have to go through Straits of Hormuz. You don't have to go through Straits of Malacca. It's just, boom, a straight shot across the North Pacific. So y'all probably know a fair amount about the project, so I'll just hit the high points. The two big anchor fields that we heard about earlier today on the North Slope, from a gas perspective, are Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson. Prudhoe Bay, every day, produces 6 to 8 billion standard cubic foot of natural gas associated with the oil, and then they pump it back into the ground. Point Thompson has just started up. They produce 10,000 barrels a day of condensate. I don't know what the gas production figure is, but as soon as they can get an outlet, which we hope to provide, then they can ramp up their gas, their production, sell more condensate, and we'll help them sell the natural gas. So the first facility, the one at the very top of the picture at the North Slope, is called the gas treatment plant. And that exists to remove the carbon dioxide from the natural gas. And we've got to do that because as you go from ambient down to minus 260 degrees Fahrenheit, carbon dioxide will turn into dry ice and plug everything up. So we've got to get that out. That goes back to the fields for reinjection. We then cool the natural gas to 30 degrees Fahrenheit and put it in the pipeline. Why do we do that? So we don't melt the permafrost. There's then an 807-mile pipeline that goes across Alaska, 42-inch diameter, 8 compressor stations, and along the way, it will supply people in Alaska. It will supply people in Alaska, keeping us warm and illuminated, but will also supply industries in Alaska. So refineries, mines, and other plants. So gas for Alaskans. Then when we come to Nikiski, we've got the LNG plant. We have 3 processing trains, so sort of 3 similar looking units side by side that convert the gas from gas to liquid. Each one is about 6.5 million metric tons of output of LNG per year. You compare that to the existing ConocoPhillips facility, which is 1 train and 1.5 MTPA, as we call it. So each facility, each train, is 4, maybe 5 times as big as ConocoPhillips, and we've got 3 of them. So it's a big operation. So this slide sort of will serve as several things. Where are we going to get the money for this project? Well, we're going to get with debt. We expect 75% of the project to come, project funds to come from debt. We're going to borrow money. And we expect 25% to come from equity. So equity sources. Now, we talk of this project as a $43 billion project. That's sort of the center point of the estimate that we inherited from the study work that was done by ExxonMobil, BP, ConocoPhillips, AGDC. So it used to be called a $45 to $65 billion project. Now it's sort of more in the $40 to $45 billion range, and the cost estimate really lands at about $43 billion. So 75% debt, 25% equity. So you may have heard about the big joint development agreement that we signed in China in November of this year. So that was with Sinopec, one of the biggest, well, a state oil company in China and one of the biggest oil companies in the world, with the Bank of China, one of the biggest banks in the world, and with China Investment Corporation, one of the biggest sovereign funds in the world. So we've got an LNG buyer, Sinopec, we've got a lender, Bank of China, and we've got a equity provider, China Investment Corp. And the idea, if I could maybe go back to that slide, is we're going to do a debt for capacity exchange. So by putting up 75% of the project funds, they then get 75% of the capacity. We're still the owner. It's like a 100% mortgage, but we're still the owner, but 75% of the capacity. So of the 20 million tons per annum of the Alaska LNG project that we've got an export license for, 75% or 15 MTPA, 15 millions of tons of LNG per year, would go to China. And then 5 MTPA, 5 million tons, would go to others. So that's sort of the whole nucleus of the joint development agreement. And we're currently in what we call the framework phase, where we're sort of writing down what we need to do with the idea that we will have definitive agreements by the end of this year. So moving along. We also have a letter of intent with Tokyo Gas, and we're really pleased about that. I think that was in December. So, you know, Tokyo Gas have got a long history with the Kenai Peninsula. They were one of the original buyers from the ConocoPhillips LNG plant, which began production in 1969. So they understand Alaska, they understand the Kenai Peninsula, and we're just really honored to be able to work with them. In late June of this year, in Washington, D.C., we signed an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, with KOGAS, the Korean National Natural Gas Company. And that's a pretty big deal, too. And we've had several technical exchanges with them. We've been to Korea several times, and we're advancing that. And then the last Memorandum of Understanding that I can talk about is with PetroVietnam Gas. So they're a smaller player. They're farther away than China, Japan, Korea. Not that much farther, but a little bit farther. But there's just so much dynamics in their economy right now that you just cannot ignore the Vietnamese. So we're really pleased to be working with them too. So those are the four big that I can talk about. And then there's maybe 10, a dozen smaller ones that I can't talk about. So we're getting commercial critical mass, and really pleased about that. So, you know, I think we've got a great project. We're close to the market. We don't go through any choke points, but that's not good enough. We've got to be competitive. We've got to do three things. We've got to clear the market. We've got to have a price that is competitive in the market. We've got to give a satisfactory return to those who would either lend us money or provide equity to the project. And then we've got to make it worth the while of the resource owners on the North Slope, of which the state of Alaska is a 25% resource owner. So between royalty and production tax, for every 100 units of natural gas that are marketed off the North Slope, the state of Alaska has access to 25 of them. So we got to be competitive. U.S. Gulf Coast, as part of the whole shale revolution, they have a lot of natural gas. That's why a pipeline project to Lower 48 just won't pencil out anymore. So can we compete with the Lower 48 projects? Yes, we think we can. So Henry Hub gas, that's sort of an index, that's running about $3 per million BTU right now. To take that gas, move it from Henry Hub to the LNG plant, build an LNG plant, process it, bring it through the Panama Canal, and get it to the Asian markets, that's another $5. So we've got to be able to beat $8 per million BTU. Well, guess what? At the moment, spot prices in Tokyo are about $8 per million BTU. So there's another sign that we've got to beat that. In China, actually, because of the whole trying to make their environment better, spot prices are kind of approaching $10 per million BTU, but just that may not last. Now, what about all the other LNG in the world? So LNG from Australia or the Middle East, Well, that's typically priced on oil. With oil prices going up right now, that translates to about $7.50. So we've got some competition out there. Can we make it? Well, let's start with the premise that we've got to meet $8 per million BTU. It costs about 80 cents per million BTU to ship the gas from Nikiski to China. So that means we've got to have gas priced at $7.20 per million BTU in Nikiski. Can we do that? So we're going to build this $43 billion project, and 75% of the money comes from money that's lent to us, and we're assuming a figure of, or an interest rate of 5%. By the time you take that over 20-year loan life, that translates to a debt figure, sort of the top green thing, of $3.60 per million BTU as a tariff. So that's what we've got to be able to clear. We build this thing at $43 billion. We get money for 75% of it, 5% interest for 20 years. We have to charge a tariff of $3.60 for every million BTU we move through the pipeline. Now, those who provide the equity to us were saying there'll be a 10% rate of return. More about that later, 10% rate of return. That translates to $1.15 per million BTU as a tariff. We need to operate the project, and we need to pay what's called PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, sort of a property tax, although it's more of an impact type payment. You add all of that, you get to $6.20 per million BTU. Okay. So we started at 8. We have 80 cents per million BTU to ship the stuff to market. We've got, what was it, $6.20 to operate and to pay those who lent us money, to pay those of us who provided equity. That leaves a dollar per million BTU for the resource owner. And is that good enough? Well, we think so, but I guess those who actually own the resources have to figure that out. But for the state of, well, Nick will talk about this, but for the state of Alaska, that means something like $250 million a year coming back to the state from the sale of the state's gas. So we got a project. We're closing in on some agreements with some key customers. We seem to be able to meet their market target. We seem to be able to pay off those who would lend us money. And we seem to be able to satisfy those who will provide us equity. And we seem to have enough left over to satisfy the resource owner. So we think the project is economic, will be economic, and we think we can make it happen. So that's sort of the background of why we think it works. Now I'll hand it over to Nick, who will talk about what's in it for Alaskans.
Hi, my name is Nick Shimoniak. I work on the commercial team for AGDC, and what that means is I'm part of the small team that sells the LNG, buys the gas in North Slope, structures the financing. So coming down and talking to this group is outside my normal day-to-day work, but I'm kind of particularly excited to do this and jumped at the chance. I was actually born here in Soldotna, grew up in Seward and Homer, and put myself through UAA as a guide on the Kenai. So I kind of consider the entire Kenai Peninsula my hometown, so this is a special treat. So Fritz talked about how we're going to build Alaska LNG, and I'm going to get into why we are. And our boss, Keith Meyer, has this great line that he tells people, tells our buyers in Asia, where they look at the North America oil and gas market and they see people protesting over pipelines and LNG projects having a hard time building the pipeline. And they say, well, you have an 800-mile pipeline. Is that a problem? And he says, you know, everywhere else it's an LNG project that needs a pipeline. We're a pipeline that needs an LNG project. We're advancing this project. We have been chartered by the state of Alaska to do this to benefit Alaskans, and that's what sets us apart from previous iterations. So what are the benefits? Jobs, low cost energy, and revenue to the state. You know, three things, starting with jobs. The presentation on the economics from Melissa earlier was great. Once we start construction in 2019 through 2025, those job numbers are gonna go through the roof for the Kenai. And then after that, from 2025 on, during operations, again, massive job increase for the Kenai Peninsula. This project alone, or this project is probably the biggest possible thing to happen for the peninsula in the coming future. Again, we expect a peak of 12,000 jobs during construction, and then during operations, an average of 1,000 for the entire system, with many of them right here in the Kenai Peninsula operating the LNG plant and marine terminal. The next one, gas for Alaskans. This is my favorite. We have this nice round number of $1,000 savings for every household. And people, you know, as soon as we published this and this insert we passed out, people, you know, immediately start asking, where'd that number come from? That, you know, first, that's, you know, it's a nice round number. I think it's a realistic number. I think it might even be a little bit conservative. In order to properly calculate that, one, we would need to know the price of gas coming from Alaska LNG. And we have a pretty good idea of what that would be delivered to the local utilities. Those contracts are still, you know, just starting to get negotiated, but we expect that number to be south of 6, north of 5. You know, I see my friends from NSTAR here. I saw another friend from Homer Electric here earlier. That is significantly lower than what the cost of gas coming out of Cook Inlet is right now. And so we don't know what that'll be in 2025, so it's hard to exactly calculate what that $1,000 number might be. And further, this is kind of a nice number for all of Alaska, for our friends in Fairbanks or other places that don't have natural gas that are burning heating oil. That $1,000, you know, if oil goes back to $100, they could be saving $1,000 a month. We really, not just for South Central Alaska, but for the entire state, have the ability to provide low-cost energy for generations. Financing. Actually, I'm going to skip this one and come back to it. The third one is investment. So it's revenue to the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska is having budgetary problems right now. This project, as Fritz said, at the very least will bring in $250 million a year to the state of Alaska just in the sale of its gas on the North Slope. Further, the state has the opportunity to invest. Right now, the state's the sole owner of this project. And if you follow the market, the market news, Alaska LNG is probably one of the hottest LNG projects in the world right now that's advancing. The market's interested, the buyer's interested, the financial markets are interested. And LNG projects are generally pretty profitable, good investments. And people are investing in other projects around the world, putting money in at the development stage. So Alaska LNG is no different. We plan to make money with this project. We plan not just on the sale of gas, but to make an rate of return on that 10 or 25% equity that Fritz mentioned. So this is a potential investment profile for the state of Alaska. I'll get back into whether or not the state will invest or how much it'll invest. But if it did decide to invest, if the state of Alaska decided to pony up the entire $10, $11 million for that equity share, we'd expect, if you follow this chart across, in that first few bars on the left, that's during the construction phase. Before we're actually making money, before we're making LNG, that's what it'll cost in construction cost. Beyond that is the kind of the 20-year contract period. This is when we're paying down that debt. It's kind of like paying off the mortgage on your house, but we're also earning a return on our equity. Once that debt's paid off, we expect there to be natural gas for years and years beyond that. Oops. So we'll keep selling gas beyond, but we don't have to pay that debt. So the equity returns go, get much, much higher. So we expect the equity rate of return without the sale of the gas to be about 8% through the initial project period, up to 10% for the life of the project. And if it were the state of Alaska investing and they're getting that, the sale of gas plus the pilt on top, it becomes a 13% up to 15% rate of return. So we do plan on making money with this project. Which brings me to the previous slide. Who's gonna pay for it? You know, we expect the debt to be issued and actually off the books of the state of Alaska. It's what we call non-recourse debt. That means that if there's any problems with the payment, they don't come to the state of Alaska looking to make it up. They go to the actual contracts. So it's not on the balance sheet of the state. But that equity portion, we expect to offer, the plan is to offer the state of Alaska the opportunity to invest, but not the requirement to. So we see this is kind of it will be the next kind of fun thing the project does beyond just buying and selling gas and LNG, is putting together the project structure and raising the funds to go to the next stage of the project and then eventually full construction. So as you see here, let me flip back so I can read off it. Yep, perfect. Okay. So on the left-hand side, for the equity funding, we see the required, and the required is third parties. We will go to the financial markets, and we will get private investors to put money into this project with the expectation to make a return. In addition, you know, in the middle, we have the state of Alaska. We expect the state of Alaska to put in more money in order to make that profit, but again, not required. And then the funnest part, and hopefully we'll kick this off soon, is we are required by statute to give Alaskans, Alaska regional corporations and Alaska municipalities, the opportunity to invest in the profit for return, whether that's a pick-click-give type thing with your PFD or whatnot. We're putting together that structure. So every Alaskan, and what the expectation is, we'll offer that opportunity to invest to Alaskans first at a, you know, kind of a, how would I put it, kind of a preferential terms prior to going out to, you know, Wall Street and third parties to invest on that. And the idea being those Alaskans will have first shot at it. And once third parties come in and we get kind of a more true market value of what this project's worth, you'll get that immediate value uplift. So again, we expect this project to be profitable. Yep. Potentially. Thank you. The question was, if there is greater interest, could the equity portion be greater than the 25% and reduce the debt load? That's potential. I think the best bang for your buck is to bring as much debt as possible. So you have $1 of equity making as owning as much of the project as possible. So if you can leverage that dollar, you know, 1-4, so, you know, if you pay for 25% of the cost, but to get 100% of the ownership, it's usually the better leverage, but that's not entirely certain out yet. So flipping to the last slide. Oh, no, this one more. So the project itself will cost about $6 billion a year to operate, $6 billion of revenue coming in. And where does that money go? First off, there's going to be $1 billion going to the purchase of gas in the North Slope. That's for the producers and the state of Alaska. $250 million of that, like I said, goes to the general fund, funds schools, roads, troopers, keeping Alaska running. The other $750 million or so will go to producers. And again, that's not to the general fund, but this is $750 million a year to some of the biggest, most important companies in the state. These are the companies that reinvest in new projects on the North Slope, hire people. We spent all morning talking about the importance of these companies, and this is $750 million going towards their operations. The next line there is the PILT. I think we're estimating $450, $500 million a year to PILT. One of the biggest benefactors of that will be the Kenai Peninsula Borough. You know, probably a large portion of that will go every year to the borough here. The next is O&M, about $1 billion a year. This is $1 billion of new spending happening in the state for local and almost entirely local operators, contractors, local firms, and employees. And then the equity return on top of that, about $1 billion. Hopefully that's primarily Alaska investment. We'll see. And then $3.5 billion for the debt repayment. That goes to the banks outside, but the way I kind of like to see that is it's kind of us paying off for the big construction party we had for the years prior to operations. Oops. So wrapping it up, it's a big project. It's a global scale project. It's achievable, and we've done this before. I'm not on the last slides, but I'm gonna flip it through. It's entirely doable, and Asia's the customer, and there'll be future opportunities beyond LNG created by this project. Happy to take questions. Also, we left a handful of these inserts. We produced this on the heels of the Chinese agreement a few months ago and put them in the newspapers, but it's got great background information on the project that I encourage you to take home with you. Great.